Sisters, listen closely. Finding out he's the one can sometimes feel like traveling through a desert of uncertainty. I mean, every time you feel like you've reached an oasis, it ends up being a mirage. As your resident sister and friend, here are 5 common red flags that you need to steer clear away from. First up, if he's asking for your phone number straight off the bat, but not your dad's, well, that's a major red flag waving in your face. Next, if he's hitting you up with texts and calls late at night, you better believe he's not serious, and chances are, he won't respect your boundaries. Watch out for those put-downs disguised as sarcastic banters. You know, the ones that make you the butt of the joke? It's time to show him the door. And oh, if he's more interested in hearing himself talk than listening to what you have to say, girl, that's a sign you need to run in the opposite direction. And let's not forget the classic line, "My ex was crazy." Yeah, right. If he's mouthing his ex left and right, chances are he's the one with the issues. And those are just the obvious red flags. Let's help you uncover what's really hiding underneath the surface with Vibe Check, the ultimate prompt card game for meaningful connections. Crafted with deep respect for Islamic traditions, Vibe Check goes beyond the surface, allowing you to discover the essence of your potential life partner's faith, character, and aspirations. With 8 thoughtfully crafted categories and 135 thought-provoking questions, Vibe Check ensures a comprehensive understanding of your potential spouse, from values and ambitions to personal quirks and preferences. I mean, skip the surface-level discussions and dive straight into what truly matters. Visit our website, www.thedigitalsisterhood.com now, and take the first step towards finding your righteous partner. Your journey to marital bliss begins here.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Hi, it's your girl Kads, it's Adar, and you're listening to the Digital Sisterhood podcast. Welcome back, friends. So, you know, this week, I always say this week is a special episode, but I really mean it this time, okay? Every week is a special episode, so I'm gonna stop saying that. But this week's episode it's an important conversation. The guest does incredible way of storytelling her story. Just relax, put your ears in, and please do not be driving. Trigger warning, this episode has strong language. Conversations about sexual assault as well as suicide. So our next guest, his name is Sabrine. Sabrine actually really isn't her real name. It's the name of her fake Insta she had in high school. Sabrine uses that name to actually identify herself on this podcast to kind of mark the story that she's going to tell.
So Sabrine is actually the name that I used to use for myself and my social media accounts when I was going through this era of a lot of pain, a lot of trauma, a lot of stuff just happening to me. And I used that name as a sort of, you know, alias for myself. And recently, like within the last year or so, I changed the name. I got out of that era. So since I'm recording this track today and talking about my story, I wanted to go back to that era and use this alias Sabrina so that I could, you know, accurately portray everything that happened in that era.
To set the scene, Sabrine grew up in Minnesota. She's a smart girl that grew up in Minnesota, grew up as an only child. She had 2 half-siblings, but she never really grew up with them. But she did have a lot of love and life around her. She had her nephews and nieces, as well as her cousins.
As I said, like, I used to be an avid reader when I was younger, so most of my childhood was spent with my nose buried in a book. Like, I would go to the library every week or so, pick up a bunch of books, finish them all in that week, and then bring it back. Everybody, like, in my family was shocked, like, how do you get through that many books so fast? Like, calm down. Maybe spend some time outside. Maybe go have a fun day with your friends. But I like my own solitude more than I like the company of somebody else. So I don't think I ever yearned for a sibling, mostly because I still had all the good parts of having a sibling, if that makes sense. Like, I still had that companionship. I still had that quality time spent with family members. Like, I still had everything that I wanted.
When you're an only child, you kind of got to figure things out yourself, right? You don't have an older sister to talk to about boys or to talk about, you know, yourself or your, some of the questions you might be confused about or be maybe too afraid to ask your parents. In this case, Sabrina obviously is an only child. Who is she going to talk to? Who is she going to seek counsel from? And in her mind, she kind of had to fend for herself. She kind of had to figure things out herself. And that's what she did.
Every single problem that I ever had, it was figure it out yourself before you speak of it. It's hard, though, because there's moments where it's like, you should have talked to this, should have talked about this to somebody else. You should have unloaded your problems to somebody else and let somebody else help you. But I did not grow up doing that. So how can I flip a switch and do that all of a sudden? But
yeah, definitely. Did you ever have a conversation about boys with your parents? Did that ever conversation ever happen?
Oh, absolutely not. The only conversation I had with boys with my mother was, you're not getting married until you graduate grad school. And I said, you know what? I completely agree with you. Mm. And that was the end of the conversation.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. This is the thing about like growing up in a Somali household. Anything that's a taboo, they're not having that conversation. Right?
They're not.
Just enough for you to know, don't do it.
Like, you know what I mean? Exactly. That's it.
All I'm going to talk about this is that you cannot participate in it. I'm not going to tell you why. I'm not going to tell you that I understand you. I'm not going to tell you my experiences. I'm not going to give you no context. It's no. And so,
point blank period.
And it can be problematic, especially given the fact that you're going to school and you're learning what's cool and everyone around you is doing it. And it seems like it's normal. And then you're going home and it's like kind of forbidden. You're like, I don't understand the context. You know what I mean? You don't understand the why.
Exactly.
And so you find yourself again with no information, no understanding, and just kind of left for yourself to figure out. Yeah, especially in growing up I can speak for myself as a Somali household. My mom was actually very, in my case, my mom was very candid about like, no. Like, she would tell me no in different ways. Like, instead of saying like, oh, this is why, just no in different ways. And she instilled a lot of fear in me. And so I think that's what kind of I operate from a place of fear. And so, but yeah, conversations are not being had in wholesale, especially from daughter to mother and daughter, right? Where it's important to have. So do you think that it impacted you anyway? Like the lack of?
Honestly, I think now that you mention it, I think that was the one thing that I lacked from not having an older sister, was there was nobody there to tell me, don't do that with a guy, or don't talk to that guy, or don't do this, or don't do that. And because there was no information coming from, you know, a parental side, it was also like, I just do whatever I feel like doing because there's nobody here to tell me not to do it, if that makes sense. I was kind of just navigating through life on my own, figuring out what's right and what's wrong on my own. And honestly, I made mistakes, and I do wish that I had somebody there to tell me not to make those mistakes. But you know, mistakes happen for a reason. You know, they're there for us to learn about, which I can't say I regret too much. But
Well, they make us the people that we are.
Exactly.
And yes. And everything happens by the will of Allah. And I agree. Like, especially being an eldest daughter, like, your role is to figure things out. You're kind of like a guinea pig, you know, in some instances.
Exactly.
Because
that's
you don't,
really what it was.
You feel like one, and you technically are one because of the lack of anything. You're just told to figure out whether that be in figuring out school or your life or relationships or your body or anything. You're just meant to figure. And I don't like to cast blame anywhere. I think it's just the reality of being a first generation. Our parents were trying to figure out many things on their shoulders, and they were already spread out thin in some cases. In a lot of cases, actually, it was a tough experience. You can imagine a lot of us learned because we experienced. Does that make sense?
That makes sense. And, honestly, yeah. And I'm glad that I'm there for, you know, not the younger generation, but the younger generation in my family. I'm glad I'm there for them, and I'm able to tell them, hey, I did this when I was your age. I regretted it. Please don't do that. And they won't do it, and they won't experience the same mistakes that I made, but they'll still learn the same lessons that I did, only because I'm there. My story starts when I was 15. I wouldn't say that's when my innocence ended, but that's when the downfall began. When I was 15, yeah, I was in high school. I met this guy. He was in the same high school as me. He was the grade above me. I think he was either 17, turning 18, or already 18. I'm not sure. Yeah, we were good friends. We were, you know, whenever we saw each other in the hallway, we'd say hi. We were talking in class, talking on Snap, that kind of stuff. Like, we were just, you know, regular friends. It escalated very, very quickly, where it started from a point of, hey, this guy's interested in me. I kind of have a crush on him. It wouldn't be too bad to, like, I don't know, maybe date him or something like that. But it was also like I was keeping my distance because still he was much older than me. Obviously, I was a minor and he was not. And I knew in the back of my head that I should have kept my distance, but I didn't, because you know how young girls are. When the guy that they like finally starts paying attention to them, they'll go to the ends of the earth for that guy. You know how it is. Especially when there's no one else telling them, oh, don't do that. So at this point, we were good friends. I think I was a junior in high school, and we were still good friends. And then one day, I was walking in the hallways, and I think just during class, I think I was going to the bathroom or something. So the hallways were empty, and I saw him come around the corner, and, we just said hi, you know, just talking for a minute, just chatting, no big deal. And then he looks around out of nowhere, he grabs me and he kisses me, and I freak out. Obviously, I just kind of like push him away and I'm like, what the hell? And I run back to class, I run back to my friend, and then I'm just like, oh my god, so-and-so just kissed me. And she looks at me with like a look of astonishment and like surprise, but like happy surprise, like good surprise, because I had told her, hey, I really, really like this guy. So I wasn't like, this is the reaction that she should have had, you know? So because of her reaction, I was like, wait, maybe this is a good thing. Like, maybe this is what I wanted. So I just said, okay, whatever, this happened, let's just move on.
Sometimes you might experience something and it feels naturally wrong, right? But then you go to friends or you look it up and you start to be told that, no, what you felt was right. Like, a guy is supposed to like you, he's supposed to touch you, you're supposed to be at his reach, because that's what love looks like. That's what, you know, all of the teen movies on television tell you. But you can't ignore the fact that it felt wrong at first. But then you share it and then somebody tells you, no, it's fine. And so you go along with it. Like, maybe, I don't know. Maybe I am overthinking this. Maybe this is fine. This is what all of us want. But that's where we're wrong.
It kept happening again and again and again, and it would escalate each and every time that it happened. But along with the physical aspect of it, that was accelerating, and also the fear in me was also accelerating to a point where I was afraid to say no. Yes, I said yes in the beginning. But as time went on and as more and more things happened, I started to realize this guy is older than me. He's stronger than me. He's bigger than me. He has a bigger reputation than me. He's well-loved in the community, well-loved in the school. The guys in the school, everybody in the school hangs on to his every last word. I have to do everything that he tells me to do or else I'm finished. I was genuinely afraid for my life because I knew that if I said no at any point, or if I rejected him at any point, he would slander my name to everybody in the school. You know, at that age, you know, when you're in high school, you're kind of worried about reputation and what your friends think of you or what strangers think of you. And you never want to be known as that type of girl. And I knew that. That's why I didn't want him to say anything. So every time he said, come outside, come into the hallway, or stay after school, come get in my car, or go to the library and I'm going to pick you up from there. Every single time that type of things happen, I just said yes.
Reputation is such a very, it's especially for, you know, Somali community, reputation and honor is really at the hands of men and how they describe your honor and reputation, right? If he says something about you, then it's taken as truthful, right? Even though our religion tells us that anybody were to slander somebody's honor, you're in trouble. You can never do that. You can never dishonor somebody. But in society today, we're at the mercy of man, because if he says something, it's taken as truthful. And if you say something, you're going to be called a liar. And so what's better is just to hide, you know, look down and just deal. That's what we're told. Just deal. Because that's better than when it comes out and you're forever tainted as that girl. And there's no coming back from it. There's no coming back from it. That's what we're left with. Those are the decisions. Just keep your head down and just deal with it and don't tell anybody, or come out with it and your reputation. You came out with it telling the truth, but you're going to deal with the consequences, not him, even though you were done wrong.
I want to say fall 2016, we were definitely friends at this time, talking at this time. It was around winter 2016 where it was when it first, like the physical stuff first started.
I have a question for you. Was there a time where you were like, yo, this guy is not to be trusted? Was there a particular moment where you're like, yo, I'm in some waters with some guy that does not care about, that doesn't, genuinely does not? Because in the beginning, absolutely, right, you thought he was a nice dude, right? You liked him. And you thought he was, I'm sure, kind, and then something switched off, right? And you mm-hmm. saw, you clearly saw something. I don't know if it's something you observed or something he said or something, you know, that you found out. Do you remember what that was that kind of changed how you felt about this individual and that you felt like your life was kind of, because I believe you, you know? And so there must have been a moment where you're like, oh, this is, it could be a slander, it could be, you know? But what was a moment you were like, yo, this guy's actually, I'm very concerned for myself. He's not what I
honestly
thought he was.
Honestly, right in the beginning, it happened that I felt that moment right in the beginning. And I felt that moment at the very, very end too. And I can talk about both. Mm-hmm. In the very beginning, there was this time where it was another instance of him like catching me in the hallway, but this time, he watched me go into class, and this was right after the bell rang, so everybody had to be in class. He watched me go in, and he texted me like 5 minutes later, hey, I'm still in the hallway, come outside. And I was in class, like we was about to start an exam, so obviously I did not like want to leave, so I just put my phone away, but my phone kept going off. So I check it again, and then he's like blowing up my phone saying, come outside, come outside, come outside. And then I'm like, well, this is another one of those times where if I don't do what he says, I'm going to regret it. So I told my teacher, hey, I need to go use the bathroom really quickly. I'll be back in 2 seconds. So I left. We went into the hallway. He took me into the theater room. There's this big stage and like curtains and everything. And we were in there. And I don't want to get too into the details of what we did because it's still, you know, very traumatizing and very just a yucky feeling to talk about. But I'm sure you can imagine what went down. What happened was somebody came in and I didn't expect that because, you know, that door was locked. We came in through another entrance. So I was surprised to see that door was being unlocked. You know, the only person that can unlock it is administration because they're the only ones that had keys. So I knew that it was somebody from the administration that was there. So I kind of peeked behind the curtain in a place where whoever was coming in from the door could not see me. And I saw that it was the principal of the school. And I wanted to run. I wanted to run out of that place, but I knew that if I ran that he would see me and he would find me and he'd make me tell him everything, and obviously I didn't want that to happen. So I just kind of backed up into a corner. The guy, he stayed where he was sitting, he stayed there, and we kind of just stood there in like complete silence waiting for that door to close and for the principal to go away. And finally it did close, he did go away, and that's when I realized what would happen to me if administration or if another student found out. Like, forget about if this guy runs his mouth, what about if somebody who isn't supposed to know finds out? What will they say? I know for sure they'll have no care for my character, they have no care for what will happen to me. They just want a new, like a little good rumor to spread around, they just want a little tidbit of information to go run their mouth with. And that's when I realized that that would be a much worse, like what's the word? That would be a much worse consequence than if this guy goes and tells his friends about what he's doing. And that was the first time where I realized that I could be in a lot of danger, because, you know, if administration finds out, the next people that are going to find out is your family. And I was not ready to deal with that level of embarrassment and shame, especially when there is no way that my family or anybody else would believe that what was happening to me was assault. Because let's be honest, yes, I did say yes in the beginning, but it very quickly became a situation where I was like, I'm not comfortable with this. But the only reason I'm saying yes is because I'm scared of what the repercussions will be. It was coercion. It was he groomed me. It was manipulation. I was not in my right mind when I was saying yes to everything that he asked me to do. I wanted to say no so badly, but I was just too scared of what he could physically do. He could if he wanted to physically harm me, he could. He had that strength in him. And I'm not someone, like, I can't say that I'm like someone that's weak, but there's no woman that has the physical strength to compete with a man 2-3 times her size. So I said that there's no way that I'm gonna let the public find out and shame me for it and embarrass me, like, and humiliate myself, because no one will understand what's happening to me. No one will understand that I didn't want this. They'll think that I chose to do this. They'll think that I wanted this to happen, when in reality it was survival. It wasn't me choosing to go and do these things with a boy that I liked. It was me being forced to do this stuff in fear of what will happen to me if I say no. And I feel like that's something that happens with so many young girls, where this type of thing will happen to them. They'll think, oh, I just regretted it. No, love, you didn't regret it. It was assault. It was sexual assault. Just because you said yes doesn't mean it was consent. Consent has to be fully like wanting to do this. You did not want to do it. It was you being coerced. It was you being groomed over a period of however many years, months, however long that guy was your quote-unquote friend. And I wish I had known that at that time, but I didn't. I just thought that everybody was going to say that I wanted it when I didn't. So I was scared of everybody else finding out. And when the opportunity presented itself for the principal to find out, I was like, no, this is like, I've really, really gotten myself into deep waters and I need to get away.
So basically, grooming is basically when somebody is manipulating you to feel, to think, to say a certain thing, and to accept that what they're doing to you, right? And grooming takes time, and it happens to young women, young minds, right? Where they can be coerced and they can be backed into a corner and they can, you know, be left that way. And so when you're groomed, you want to be a subservient of the person. So you want to please the person because you don't know how to, you know, be any other way. And so, and it happens slowly and it happens gradually, right? And both parties have to be at different levels in terms of this, in case age, maturity, experience. And people have a hard time understanding, like, grooming, right? Even our justice system doesn't accept grooming, right, for young minds. They'll say, you know what I mean? Because if the stuff that they did is, it requires intelligence and consent, and, you know, they'll say, how could you be groomed this way? And you were just such a willing participant. You were a vocal participant. Reality is that grooming is evident, and grooming is truthful. And grooming is the reality. That's exactly what happened. And it's a valid, you know, justifiable reason. You know what I'm saying? But a lot of people don't see it that way.
I think the end of March 30th is when I had physical evidence of what was going on. So, like, bruises and stuff, mostly from when he would just grab me. And I had taken a video of it, and I still have it in my camera roll somewhere. But I don't think I've looked at it in so long because it's very traumatizing. I even had to, like, wear, like, specific clothing around the house. Like, I had to wear literally a sweatshirt at home to cover it because, you know, usually I'm at home in Bati, but I had to wear a sweatshirt until the bruise went away, because I didn't want people seeing it and asking me, where'd you get the bruise from? Because I could not lie. I did not know how to lie. So in the entirety of 2017 is when that's the year that the bulk of the assault happened. I don't want to get too into the nitty-gritty details, but genuinely, I think that within that year period of between that first kiss and the time I finally told him to get away from me and never speak to me again, we did everything short of sex, basically. And this happened multiple times. I want to say about 10 or so separate events of him like catching me or telling me to come outside or telling me to pop out or anything like that. And, you know, at this point, I was fully groomed. I was brainwashed, but I was still extremely nauseous and terrified, like petrified every single day. But I didn't understand why.
Sometimes when you're a young woman, or just being a woman in general, or a girl, you feel like you're at the mercy of people, especially when you feel like something's at cost, right? Like, we're told that when a guy comes, approaches you, and he tells you that, you know, he likes you and he's like doing his thing, that, you know, if you're going to reject him nicely, or else you're in jeopardy, like you're in trouble. And so we're always at this state of perpetual fear because we recognize the dynamics, right? This man is bigger and stronger, and we're, you know, at his mercy. And so sometimes we choose the choice that's safer, what we think is safer. In reality, you know, we find out that it's not safer. We're just stuck. We're stuck. And until you have a breaking moment, you say, I'm not stuck anymore. I can't do this anymore. I can't do this to myself no more. And you make the call that feels like it's going to end everything.
I remember a specific day, actually, many months later, I think 6 months later, I think I hit my breaking point. I had gone to the library and I was just wanting to do homework. I went by myself and I kind of just posted it on my story, and he saw it and swiped up and told me, hey, I'm near the area. I'm going to be outside in 10 minutes. And I don't want to curse or nothing, but when I tell you, my heart fell out of my ass. Like, I think that was the first panic attack that I ever had in my life. And at the time, I didn't know that it was a panic attack, but I was panicking so badly. And you know, when you're panicking like that, it's no longer, I'm scared. Oh, I don't want this to happen. Oh, it's more like, oh, I'm going to die if this doesn't end right now. Like, my heart feels like it's about to fall out of my chest, and there's not a single thing that I can do to stop it. I just have to go through with it. I do not wish that level of fear on not even my worst enemy, because that is a life or death type of fear. It's not a everyday like, oh, I'm scared of this thing, I'm scared of that thing. It's like, if I don't get myself out of the situation, I will die. And there's no logic behind it. There's no reasoning. There's no, oh, this is just one thing that's going to happen. It's going to go, you're going to get over it. Like, it's like death is staring you in your eyes. And honestly, it was frightening. And I think that's what, you know, flipped the switch for me and made me realize that this is not what I want. Like, this is like no type of repercussions would be worth this, if that makes sense. And he picked me up. We went to this, like, I don't even remember where we went to. That memory is blocked from my mind. And when he was bringing me back to the library after everything, after he had gotten out of me what he wanted, he took me back to the library, and I had left my belongings, like my laptop, my backpack, I had left it in the room that I was staying because I thought I was going to be going out and coming back in 10 minutes, but I had come back like an hour later. When I realized that my belongings are missing from the room that I was in, I was like, I know I did not just lose all my things just to meet up with a guy that I don't even want to be meeting up with. And it was something so insignificant, but it really just flipped a switch in my head where I was like, this cannot continue any longer. I don't care at all what happens to me. I will not be putting myself through this level of pain anymore, because no amount of shame, like public shame, no amount of everybody knowing my business is going to be worth what he's doing to me. And you know what? I was right. Afterwards, he did tell his friends. He did slander my name. And honestly, yes, I cried about it a while when I knew that everybody around me was talking about me, but it was still worth it. I would never, ever put myself, I would never, like, I don't want to say put myself in that situation, but I would never switch spots. Like, I would never say, oh, I'd rather have all that stuff happen to me than have my name slandered.
Sabrine finally had enough. She couldn't do anymore. She couldn't hurt herself this way anymore. And so she had decided that she wasn't going to do this. Unfortunately, her worst nightmare still happened.
I want to say the end of 2017. This is when I had to physically fight him off of me with whatever feeble strength that I had. This was after that one library day. The day that I decided I can't continue this anymore. I mean, I had blocked him on socials, but what can that do when you still see this person 5 days a week in school? So this day, he came up to me asking me, oh, why did you block me? Why are you not speaking to me? And I said, I just like, please stop. Please leave me alone. I don't want to do this anymore. And then he was like, what are you talking about? Like, I know you want this. And he grabbed me and he tried to kiss me again and pushed me up against the wall and held me against the wall, like grabbed both of my wrists and would not let me go. And he had both of my wrists in one hand and I could not fight him off. And I tried everything that I could. I tried to turn my head. I tried to, I don't know, disappear into the wall. I tried to move away. I tried to do something and nothing I did worked. And finally, when he let go of me for a split second, I told him, if you don't let go of me right now, I'm going to start screaming and everybody's going to come out into these hallways. And then he looked at me with like a look of disgust and finally let me go. And
that's insane. And these were like public school hallways, right?
What was that?
These were like public school hallways and there was like nobody walking in the hallway.
There was nobody walking in the hallway.
Like and nobody could see you.
There was nobody walking in the hallway, but there could have been. I'm shocked that at all those times, there was not a single person that was in the hallway coincidentally the same time as us. Like, how? Like, you know, kids, they're always skipping class. There's always going to be somebody in the hallways. But every single time I saw him, there was nobody in the hallways. And I wish somebody had seen that last time, because that would have been validating, you know. That would have been like, oh, somebody else is seeing what's happening to me. It's not just all in my head. But as crazy as it sounds, nobody saw.
Mm-hmm. And it makes it more isolating, because extremely, you're experiencing this what feels like, which is public but feels very private, right? You're in your own head, and what do you have to tell somebody? This is how, here's where it happened, you know, in these public. And that's the thing about these things that people find so hard, or they like to poke holes in, is that, well, nobody saw it happen. Mm-hmm. Right? Nobody saw that. We couldn't tell on you. You didn't look sad. We didn't see any bruises. You know what I'm saying? Like, are you sure that happened? Are you sure it's not all in your head? Right? And so and when you're not validated like that, like by all these concrete evidences, you know, time, you just feel like, okay, this is so wild. You know, like, this is so far-fetched that, like, I'm actually being assaulted in school in the middle of the hallway.
And nobody sees. Like, girl, there's cameras in the halls.
Yeah.
Like, there's cameras in the halls. Like, anybody, if the administration had been doing their job and checking the cameras like they should have been. Mm-hmm. Even on a, not even on a daily basis, but a monthly basis. Like, mm-hmm. That's how long it was. Like, I'm telling you, this stuff was happening for a long period of time. And the fact that nobody knew until he told somebody about it, until he told his friends about it, and his friends told others, and that's when everything got out. Mm-hmm. The fact that nobody, and still, even when he told his friends, from a guy's point of view, it was, she wanted it.
Yeah, he told his side.
And so I never, ever, ever got a chance to tell my side. I never, ever got a chance to tell my story, because it was ingrained into everybody's head. She wanted it. Mm-hmm. And how am I supposed to fight against that? Especially when there's no proof. Especially when from his point of view, I did say yes. So.
And he controlled the narrative.
And he, absolutely.
He ended up telling his friends the nature of their relationship. And Sabrine went into a cold silence. They always say to people who, you know, experience this, they'll say, well, why didn't you speak up when it happened? Right? Why did you wait a year? Why did you take so long to kind of invalidate what happened to them? But trauma, this, it's not easy to ingest. It's not easy to speak about the thing that changed you forever. Sabrine fell to a cold of silence. She couldn't speak. She couldn't tell anyone. She was too afraid to. Who would believe her? He's already shared his side of the story. Who's going to believe hers?
I didn't open my mouth about it until the end of 2018. For a year, I did not talk to anybody about how I felt. I didn't talk to anybody about what happened. I didn't talk to anybody about what he did to me. I was the picture of happiness and happy-go-lucky. I was just minding my business. I was just doing my thing. I was acting like I was not fazed at all. When that year after it ended and before I started talking about it, that was single-handedly the worst year of my life. And now I don't want to trigger our reader, our listeners or anything, but I tried to commit. I think once or twice. You know how sometimes those things are just blocked from your memory. You don't, like, I wish I could remember the details, but it's just, it's blocked. There's no way I'm going to be able to tap into it and tell details. There's some things that are so traumatic, it's burned into my brain and I will never forget it for as long as I live. And there are other things where it's like a blank canvas where all I can remember is that it happened, but I can't remember any details.
Yeah.
What I do remember is that every single day for about 6 months or so, I was not praying. I was not making dua. I was not going to sleep reading adhkar. I was not doing a single thing that made me worthy of being a Muslim, because I was like, I did all this. There is no way that I'm worthy of anything because, you know, of that feeling of shame, of that feeling of embarrassment, of like, how can I repent? How can I plead to Allah for forgiveness or for even relief from pain when this is what I did, when this disgusting thing and is what I did? And that was also the point where I was absolutely blaming myself and telling myself, you put yourself in this position. You did this to yourself. You have nobody to blame but yourself. If you had just said no in the beginning, none of this would have happened to you. If you had just fought back a little bit harder, this would have happened to you. You had so many chances to say no and you didn't. This is your fault. So I was not asking for forgiveness. I was not asking for help. I was not asking for anything. I was like, if I die tonight, I would be so happy. And that's exactly what I did. Every single night for months, the only dua that I made before I went to sleep was, please don't let me wake up in the morning. And that was the only thing that I wanted, because I did not have the strength to like fully go through and do something that would absolutely, like without a doubt, end my life. I also did not have access to anything that would without a doubt end my life. I also knew that if I did that to myself, the people around me would never, never recover from it. My family that I'm so impossibly close to would blame themselves. They would never recover from it. My friends who were around me when it was happening, who knew it was going on, didn't know how I felt, but knew it was going on, would blame themselves. And I couldn't live with that fact, because I was like, what if put myself in their shoes? If a friend of mine or if a family member of mine did that to themselves, for the rest of my life, I would blame myself. And there would be nobody that could tell me that it wasn't my fault, because that's just the level of care that the people around me had for me, that if they had known what was going on,
would you say that what saved you was of recognizing the love that you had in your life and recognizing the people that love you so much would not recover, but it wasn't just for yourself, but because you love these people? Yes. And you didn't want them to do that to themselves, right? You didn't want them to
only reason why I didn't go through with it all the way was because I knew that the people around me would never recover.
Mm-hmm.
But that didn't stop me from wishing for it every single night. Mm-hmm. That didn't stop me from wanting to step in front of a car. That didn't stop me from wanting to accidentally fall off a ledge. That didn't stop me from putting myself in the way of danger. I was hoping and praying and wishing for months that something would happen to me so that I could be relieved from the pain, and also the people around me would not blame themselves because it was an accident. Mm-hmm. It was a very, very, very dark time, and I regret not talking to the people around me about it. I regret not telling somebody how I felt. And the only reason why I didn't talk is because of that shame, first of all. And second of all, when I first started realizing what had happened to me, this was like January 2018, I had started realizing, hey, maybe I think I've been, I was started trying to ask myself questions like, did you get assaulted? Did you get raped? What happened to you? Because none of that was consensual. So what happened to you? And I kept asking myself that, and I didn't have an answer for myself because I had never been exposed to this type of thing. There was never, like right now in the Somali community, there is, you know, the topic of sexual assault is not something that people tend to shy away from. Like, thankfully, we have progressed past that point where people are able to tell their stories without facing shame or anything like that. But even as early as 2018, like, that wasn't a thing, you know? So I remember this was the first time that I ever opened my mouth about it. I was talking to one of my friends. She was my best friend at the time. Like literally we were attached at the hip. Like I went to this girl with every single problem that I had and she would help me solve it type thing. I messaged her and I told her, I think I got raped. And she told me that rape is a strong word. And that just shocked me into silence. It shocked me into silence, really. And then I was like, you know what? Maybe that's just one reaction. I tried again. I told one of my guy friends at the time. We were friends at that time. And I told him again, hey, I think I got raped by so-and-so. And then the first question he asked me was, but did the nigga fuck you though? So his only concern was, is she tarnished? Is she like not a virgin anymore? Is she like garbage to me? Like, should I not even go for this girl anymore? That's all he was worried about. And that was the second response I got. But I tried again because I was like, this cannot be the responses that I'm getting. I tried one more time and I went to one of my other friends and I asked her, hey, I think something happened to me. Something happened with so-and-so that I wasn't really comfortable with. Like, I don't know what's going on. Can I talk to you about it? Because I feel like something's not right. And she was like, what are you talking about, girl? This is the guy that you've been crushing on for how long? Like, I support this relationship. Like, I want you guys to be together. Like, this is your guy. Like, what are you talking about? And from that point on, I was like, if the people that are closest to me in my life are not believing me and are telling me, are not validating me at all, who the hell is going to? Who the hell is going to believe me? Who the hell is going to support me if the people that are closest to me are doing the complete fucking opposite?
Imagine you finally muster up the courage to tell somebody that something happened to you, to people that you love. And then they turn to you and they say, that didn't happen. That was all in your head. No, you're overreacting. Imagine. How are they able to come out of that again? They've been shut down. The thing that they were afraid of this entire time happened again. Nobody believed her.
So I didn't talk ever again. I kept my mouth shut for another year. So this is 2 years now of like silence, of not speaking about it, of just silent depression, silent suicidal tendencies, silent anxiety, PTSD, everything. I was dealing with everything on my own. All these mental illnesses, I was dealing with it on my own. I didn't get outside support. I didn't get help. I didn't get someone to just vent to. I had nothing. It was all in my head. And I had nobody to talk to about it at all. because I was so ashamed and I completely blamed myself. And you know what? That's where I went wrong. I got the wrong reactions, and that's what I based everything off of. That's what I based my value off of. I just think sometimes, had I gotten the correct reaction from the jump, how different would my life be? How happy would I have been? Would this depression ever have developed? Would this PTSD ever develop this far? Like, who I know without a shadow of a doubt that if I had gotten support in the beginning, that if I had somebody that knew what was going on and somebody to tell me, you got sexually assaulted, even though you said yes in the beginning, even though this was somebody that you trusted at one point, even though there was never a time up until the very end where you said no, that was still sexual assault because it was coercion, it was forced, it was manipulation, as I said before. None of that, not a single thing was consensual. And you have to take into the fact that I was still a minor. Like, I was 16 at this point. And if you're a minor, point blank period, there is no consent. If you're a minor, there is no consent. And I want our listeners to hear that, and I want that to drill that into their heads, that if you are a minor, there is no such thing as consent, no matter who it is. Even if they're a minor themselves, there is no such thing. Ugh, I just wish somebody had drilled that into my head back then. Maybe then I would have been happier. I don't know.
You know, sorry. I'm trying not to sound like I'm tearing up here, but I'm sad. Oh my God, I hate when I do this, but I'm sad because, you know, you were strong enough to, you know, look past that, you know, and decide for yourself that you were, you know, valuable. And you did that by yourself. You know, you somehow, like, mustered up enough to say, okay, I'm not gonna, you know, really just do and end my life. Like, I'm at awe of you for being in this place that you are now, and you're in a really good place because you're strong enough to see everything for what it is and what it was. And not only that, you're advocating for women to women and little girls. But girls in general, about this important conversation about sexual assault and consent. And I'm proud of you, you know. I don't mean this. I really am proud of you, Sabrine. And I just, for the listeners that are listening, I think if they take anything from this, I just want them to know, like, and I know you want the same for them as well, is that, like, if you experience this, that, you know, it doesn't equal that you're a throwaway. Or that Allah has abandoned you, or, you know, like, that you don't deserve, you know, love and mercy, or you don't deserve any of that. It's so wrong. You know, it's so wrong. It's so wrong. And I know a lot of women are, and little girls are suffering silently every day. You know, I know there's so many of them. And, I don't know what else to say to them but to tell them that they're loved and they're important and they're valuable. And no matter what anybody says, you know, Allah sees the truth. He knows. No matter how many human beings disappoint you and they break your heart or they, you know, wrong you, that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala does not. And He knows everything. And you're valuable to Him. Sorry, I'm just like, I just want them to know, wallahi, like, Allah sees, He sees everything, and He will always vindicate you, you know, He'll always stand by you, and He'll always, you know, honor you for your truth, you know what I'm saying, and that His view is what counts, His view is what's important, not the people, no matter what they say, you know. And I just want them to hold on to that, and they're not throwaways. They will never, never, never will Allah abandon you. Never will He abandon you. You know, He will never, as much as we turn away from Him, He'll never abandon you. You know, it's like He always is there, always. And He wants good for us. And it's just, it disgusts me the lack of, you know, compassion from even people when somebody comes to you and they say, I think this happened to me. You know, and alhamdulillah, I'm not going to lie, I will say that we're coming to a new age where women are being believed and women are being seen and women are being, you know, elevated in their truth. And it took a long time to get to this point. We have so much more work to do. But in the spiritual sense, I just want them to understand that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala forgives everything. He defends. He's just. He is so just. He is so fair. You know what I'm saying? And that nobody is too far for him. Nobody is damned. Nobody is damned. I don't care what you tell yourself or what those voices. That's not the truth. And Allah is exactly what you think he is. If you think Allah is compassionate, indeed he is compassionate. If you think he is forgiving, indeed he is forgiving. You know, and I just want them to understand that, you know, because I know many women, again, are in this place and they hide and they're not telling what happened to them. And I understand, and you don't have to either. You know what I'm saying? There's nothing as bad. I just want them to take care of themselves, you know, and their mental health and do what's right for them and heal however way they can. You know what I'm saying? But Sabrina, I'm in awe of you because I know this was no light ask or easy conversation to have because this is real life for you. And I just want you to know that for whoever is touched by your story, I ask Allah to reward you for that. And they're a heavy weight on your mizan. So I'm just so, you know, proud of you. Wallahi, I don't even, you know, we've never met.
Sorry, I did not mean to make you cry.
I'm sad, but I'm also very proud. You know what I mean? Like, they're not all sad tears. It's almost relief too, because I really want that to, your message to really resonate. Nobody is lost. Nobody.
If I had listened to something like this when I was going through the depths of it, it would not have happened. If I was listening, if I had anybody, even the slightest whiff of validation or anything similar to everything that you just said, mm-hmm. I would not be in the place that I am right now. I would not be as depressed and as suicidal as I was. That would have never happened. I could have avoided all of that pain. I could have avoided all of that trauma. I could have avoided everything bad in my life if I had just had one person to tell me everything that you just said.
I just hope that we're that one person for somebody today.
I'm,
you know,
praying this is the reason why I sat down and decided to talk about this traumatic experience and open up about everything that happened to me, just so I can be that person for that young girl one day who thinks I am not any less worthy or I am not any less of a woman because of what happened to me. Not because of what she did, because best believe it is not her fault. It is not something that she put herself into. It is not a position that she put herself into. It's something that happened to her. I wish somebody would have just, yeah. I hope I'm that person. I pray I'm that person. And that is the only reason why I'm doing this podcast, is so I am this person. Even if it changes one girl's life, even one girl's life, it'll be worth it. All this vulnerability will be worth it, because I said before that this is the first time that I'm talking about all of this in detail from start to finish, in the hopes of maybe it will change some young girl's life the way I wish it would have changed mine. I want listeners to know that Allah is just. And the women that get assaulted, the women who these horrific things happen to, they will get their justice. The men that did this to them, will face justice in due time. They will get what's coming for them in due time. Allah will not let your pain and your trauma and your struggles go unnoticed. I thought that I was never going to get justice because I never spoke up. I never spoke up out against him because I was just afraid of what his name could do. You know, women do not get believed just like that, especially when it comes to the guy's family. The guy's family will believe their son before they believe anybody else. Even me now, even myself now, as educated and as experienced as I am, know that I was right to not speak up against. I was right to not speak up against him. I don't want the point of this to be don't speak up against your abuser. Please do, but only if it is safe for you to do so.
Okay, I have a question for women who don't know if they're in relationships with men that are hard. What's a sign? What would you tell your younger self? Like, what would you tell her? You know, like things to look, maybe things to look out for, or in general, how, you know, at that age, how we should, you know.
I would say stay away from just, first of all, boys who are older than me, older than you, and second of all, boys who you know only want physical stuff from you. As much as you like them, as much as they give you all the attention in the world or whatever it is that you want from them, it's not worth it in the end. At the end of the day, you're still a minor. Mm-hmm. You're still someone who can very well be taken advantage of. Mm-hmm. So just don't even, you know these men are not going to stop. You know these boys are not going to stop doing what they do. Mm-hmm. I never want to say, don't put yourself in that position. Because there's a girl gets put into that position. Yeah. She doesn't put herself into it. Mm-hmm. But you know these men are never, ever going to stop being the way they are. So I would say to young girls out there, don't entertain these men. Mm-hmm. Especially when you're a minor. And especially when you know all they want is physical activity from you. The camp, Al-Isra. Mm-hmm. It's the summer camp, mm-hmm. Just for Muslim girls. It's just a weekend away at a cabin. It's about 60 or so girls with a handful of counselors and other staff. And it's just a place for Muslim girls to, you know, unwind, take off their hijab, be in nature, stuff like that. It's a great way to disconnect from reality, basically. And I go every year. I love it so much. The first time that I ever got validated was at that camp. And to this day, I thank them and I thank the women who put it together for doing that for me, for validating me, because it was genuinely a turning point in my recovery. Honestly, there was not a dry eye in that crowd. And I would have never, ever, in all my years of life, I would have never expected that I would have gotten that kind of support. Every single woman there supported me. Every single woman there came up to me, hugged me. And I call that moment the most bittersweet moment of my life, purely because the sweetness of finally being able to get everything off my chest and the sweetness of having that support available for me, but also the severe bitterness of afterwards, so many women coming up to me, so many girls coming up to me, telling me too, this happened to me too. I feel like you just described what happened to me in my life. I feel like you just literally told my life story. I want to say that, of course, you know, all the pain, depression, all that stuff does not disappear overnight. I was still severely depressed, but I was happier, a little happier, knowing that if I needed support, it's out there. And even after the weekend was over and everybody went home, there were still people messaging me, reaching out to me, telling me either their stories or telling me how proud they were of me or hearing how grateful they are for me. And it was just, it was like I was living in an alternate universe. I could not believe that this type of stuff could have ever been available to me.
I also want you to, what advice do you have for women who are going through it right now secretly and they feel like they have no one? What would you tell them?
The advice I have for them is to never stop talking about it, because the more you talk about it, the lighter the load is on your chest. All I would say is just to be careful of who you tell it to, because like I said before, I told the people that were closest to me and I did not get the response that I wanted, but still I wish that I had talked about it more. I wish that I had found somebody else. But you also have to remember that your friends are not therapists. They are not mental health professionals. People who are going through this right now silently, no matter how daunting it may seem, please, for the love of God, please, please seek out therapy and seek out somebody who can help you with what you're feeling. Somebody who knows what you're going through and can be that person of support for you. And I want to say that if you don't have that person in your life right now, if you're yearning for that person who can give you support, I can be that person for you. If you follow the Digital Sisterhood on Insta, please just message them, reach out to them, let them know that you want to talk to me, and I'll give them my contact information so that you can come talk to me. I have space for you in my heart. I have knowledge to give. I have experience to share. I can be that person of support for you, even if I'm a stranger to you. I can be that person for you.
And that is on Sisterhood, eh?
That is on Sisterhood, Wallahi.
That's incredible. So for anybody that's going through it right now and they're really suffering, reach out to us and we'll get you in contact with Sabreen. I ask Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala that for the sisters who are suffering and silent, that he grants them healing. And I ask Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to help our community gather around, comfort and protect those who are, you know, those who are vulnerable, those who have experienced such trauma, such trial, and for us to finally have the conversation that's so long overdue. So long overdue. I mean, if this podcast has been any useful and help to you and you love it so much, inshallah, support us by donating and joining our Patreon membership. Inshallah, you'll find it on our website at www.thedigitalsisterhood.com. You can also find it on the Patreon, www.patreon.com. And yeah, follow us, share, and keep us in your du'as. This episode was produced by Beautiful Light Studios. I'd like to give a shout out to our executive producer, Mona Sheikh Omar. Jazakallah khair, for allowing us to share this important story today. I also like to give a shout out to our Patreon executive producers for sponsoring this episode. Thank you guys for listening. And I hope that it was of benefit and of healing and it was useful, inshallah. We will attach resources to this episode in our bio, inshallah. See you guys like every week in your ear, in your speaker, telling you a good story. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.